I'm going to start off with just giving you some background information about Texas and the public health structure. We have 254 counties in Texas, the total population of over 24 million. Only 52 counties or cities contract with the state to have a local health department, which means that the other 202 counties have public health services provided through the state, which are done through 8 regional state health departments. 83% of the population, however, does reside in a local health department jurisdiction. As you can see, pertussis has decreased in Texas since the licensure of the vaccine, or the toxoid, in 1949. And if you look at the pattern of disease, of incidence in the peak years, you can see that it's a cycle. Every 3 or 4 years, there's a large peak followed by a quick decrease and then a slow increase back to a peak. That's really flattened out over the past late 20th century, and we're starting to see an increase again since 2000. As you can see, in the past decade, that 3-4 year cycle has continued on. However, the peaks are increasing, which we find a little bit worrisome. In 2009, our provisional data shows that we had 3,361 cases of pertussis in Texas. And that's a 50% increase over our peak in 2005, which was just slightly over 2,200 cases. And that's an incidence rate in 2009 of 13.5 cases per 100,000 population. If we look at the age groups of pertussis, there has been some change over the past 5 years, although nothing very dramatic. The 5 to 9 age group has been increasing almost each year, and the 10 to 14 age group increased in the last 2 years, and the 1 to 4 age category increased this past year. And we think we can link some of these increases back to specific outbreaks. In 2009, we did see a lot of preschool or daycare related outbreaks, and some of our best reporters in the state are school nurses, so that may be why we're seeing more cases in the 5 to 9 and 10 to 14 age group. And also, we have very aggressive contact investigation practices in our schools. So we may be finding one child and then finding additional cases that may be increasing those numbers. If we look at the incidence, however, it's a little bit different. The under 1 category is the highest burden of disease. There's 164 cases per 100,000 population. And the under 1 category is where we really see the burden of disease, the severe disease. That's where the hospitalizations are and the deaths. And so we always worry when those numbers go up. And 2009, across the board, had higher incidence in almost every age group except the over 20. And several of these incidence rates in the 1 to 4, the 5 to 9, and 10 to 14 are 3 to 4 times higher than the state average, the state rate. On the issue of severity, we have seen in the past that the deaths are cyclical, and that when our numbers peak, the deaths peak. We did not see that this year, and we are not complaining. We had 3 deaths in 2009, which is down from 4 in 2008 and down from 9 in 2005. And almost all of those deaths are in children under the age of 1, and in 2009, they were all children under the age of 2 months. This slide doesn't capture the whole picture. We do have quite a few cases with unknown race or ethnic status. There hasn't been a lot of change over the years, and these proportions roughly mirror the racial breakdown in the state of Texas. So the vaccination history, we have a lot of problems capturing this data for a variety of reasons. In 2009, over 30% of our cases reported an unknown vaccination status. Partly that's the adults don't know their vaccine status, but also we've had some problems with the large number of cases. Some of the health departments were just too burdened actually doing the investigations and doing the actual public health work to do the vaccine capture and to actually do the data entry. So we're hoping that we can catch that backlog up and get a better picture. However, about 11% of the cases reported no vaccine at all, and the majority of those are children under the age of 2 months. So while we don't have a complete vaccination status. We have looked at this in specific outbreak situations or in specific counties, and we have a pretty good idea that our cases are fairly well vaccinated, and they may not be all up to date because there's you know, some with the 9 to 11 age group, we're trying to catch those kids up now that a vaccine is available for them. But we do have the feeling that our outbreaks and our cases are actually fairly well vaccinated, that this is not an issue of unvaccinated children. It may be unvaccinated adults. We can't really capture that. Just to compare the 2005 and 2009 cases, we had a similar number of counties reporting at least one case of pertussis. The median cough duration was also fairly similar. Where we start to see a divergence, however, is in the percentage of cases hospitalized. It was just under 9% of the cases in 2009, and we have a couple different theories about that. One, we are hearing anecdotally from providers and from some of our local health departments that the pertussis that they're seeing in 09 or that they saw in 09 is less severe than what they've seen in the past. So is that because the vaccine is mediating it somehow? Is there something else going on? We don't have those answers, but again, you know, the lower hospitalization numbers and the lower deaths are progress, even if we can't quite explain them. There was a slightly higher percentage of confirmed cases in 2009, and that's confirmed epidemiologically or through laboratory confirmation. And about 40% of our cases were lab confirmed in 2009, and that's almost entirely PCR. We had a very few, very small number of cases that were confirmed by culture, and those are the only two methods we accept for confirmation. In 2005, there were more culture-confirmed cases, not just PCR, but that capability has really not been maintained very well in the state of Texas. Just to give you an idea of some of the of what it looks like across the state, Texas is a very big state with quite diverse population, but the population of Texas is sort of more on the eastern half, and so it sort of makes a little bit of sense that that's where we'd see our cases. And in 05, you can see that sort of the central Texas area is where we had quite high incidence rates, and we did see several outbreaks in that area. In 2006, the number of counties reporting cases, the incidence in various counties has sort of decreased, and we see that again in 2007. And then in 2008, we start to see the resurgence as the incidence rates go back up, and it's really heavily in the northeast Texas area. And I'm not sure how well you can see this, but there's sort of this peninsula that goes down sort of through the middle of the state that connects up to the Oklahoma border. And that's the I-35 corridor. And we actually see this pattern in almost all of our diseases in Texas, that there are several population areas, Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, down to Laredo are all on the I-35, but our diseases tend to track down I-35 and then also around the Houston area. So, and then in 2009, the pattern shifts a little bit. It's sort of horizontal across the state, which is a little bit unusual. And again, we see that central Texas burden, which is the capital area in the Hill Country. So what this slide is starting to allude to, and which I have glossed over in the presentation to this point, is what's driving the outbreak in 2009 is the central Texas area. And two counties in particular are add up to over 1,700 cases. So it's two adjoining counties, and they make up over 50% of the cases in the state. And we have looked at this extensively to figure out what's going on in those counties and then in the counties surrounding them to find out, do they have more exempters than the rest of the state? Do they, you know, are there children behind in vaccine? What is happening there? And we see the same patterns in that part of the state compared to the rest of the state in terms of age distribution, race distribution, vaccine status. There are some differences in laboratory confirmation, which I'll get into in a moment, but there's quite aggressive follow-up of the cases in there. There's been a lot of media attention. The deaths that we've seen in Texas did not come from Central Texas, interestingly enough, and the Central Texas region has lower rates of hospitalization compared to the rest of the state. So while there's much more disease there, it's a milder disease. So then one of the theories we have for why we have such a disparity between Central Texas and the rest of the state has to do with our surveillance practices. The surveillance practice itself is uniform across the state. A lot of private providers, hospitals, even other commercial laboratories can submit specimens directly to our state lab. It doesn't have to go through public health approval or come from a public health provider. And the state lab, the DSHS laboratory, reports negative and positive PCR results back to public health. So anytime a test is done, that generates a report that goes to a local or regional health department that then follows up on that. So, and all those results, then it's a patient phone call, interviewed for symptoms, then it becomes not a case, probable, or maybe confirmed through an EpiLink. So all of that's uniform across the state. What's not uniform is that the providers in Central Texas are much more likely to use the laboratory, which is also located in Central Texas. So PCR testing is done at a much higher rate in Central Texas. And so we believe we may have created an amplification cycle where an outbreak occurs and then we alert the community that there's been this outbreak, and we alert the providers, and so more testing is done. And then more testing means that there's more lab results, which leads to more investigations, which leads to more community and provider awareness, which then leads to more testing, and so on and so forth. And so we haven't quite figured out how to break that, if we want to discontinue some of our surveillance practices, or if we want to encourage the rest of the state to submit more specimens so that everybody can be brought up to Central Texas levels. If you factor in the idea that we're seeing less severe disease in Central Texas, is that because we've just diluted the case pool, or is it because we're actually finding disease earlier and our investigation and preventive activities are actually preventing it from getting to that severe point? So we are afraid that if we discontinue these practices that we might see those deaths and hospitalizations that we aren't seeing this year. So this is a big point of contention in Texas and up for a lot of negotiation. We have looked at the data in every possible way, and the one thing we have been able to figure out is that cases that have a negative PCR that meet the clinical definition and are not EpiLinked, so that's your basic probable case, those make up about 15% of cases statewide and about 30% of cases in the two counties. So even if we took out 30% of the cases, we're still over 2,000 cases, and we're still over 1,000 cases in those two counties. So it wouldn't answer the entire question of why we're seeing an increase, but it may have maybe some artificial noise that we've created. Okay. So just in summary, we've seen an increase in pertussis since 2000. We are still seeing the peaks every 3 or 4 years. The age distribution is fairly similar, although we have seen some increases in the school age and then in the preschool in this most recent year. There have been no changes in race or ethnicity. Fewer hospitalizations have been reported. Anecdotally, less severe disease is being reported. There's a wide geographic distribution, and a high proportion of cases are vaccinated appropriately against pertussis, and then the question of our laboratory and surveillance bias. So that's all. Thank you.